You mentioned 1941, December 7th, 1941. You would have been about 27 years old, I believe.
That's right.
What are your recollections of that day?
I was driving from Philadelphia to Boston and got the news on the radio about Pearl Harbor. It was quite a surprise.
Did that affect your family? You were 27. Did that mean the draft would come after you?
They never did. In the period of the war, I applied for a commission in the Navy in Boston, and I was a very competent navigator. I'd learned navigation from my Uncle Ray on his yacht. I would have loved to have had a commission in the Navy, but they turned me down on the grounds that I was worth more as a taxpayer.
Really?
Yes.
Because of your salary?
Yes, and what I was making at the time. And my present wife's father was turned down for the same reason.
I had never heard of that. You remember what the war meant to the country? A lot of rationing going on. You remember those days?
Oh, I sure do. I had an auxiliary 20-gallon gas tank built in the trunk of my car, which fed by gravity to the regular tank. I had a good friend in southern New Hampshire that supplied me with any gas requirement I had, regardless of the ration.
Southern New Hampshire. So how did he get the fuel to you?
Well, I'd drive to New Hampshire and get the auxiliary tank filled up.
What kind of car were you driving at that time?
I was driving a Buick.
But then, you know, there was shortage of other things, some food items. Ladies were having a hard time finding nylons, all those kind of issues.
The one thing I remember is butter, which was rationed. And I had a favorite restaurant in Boston who supplied me with butter any time I needed it. And unfortunately, one night on the commuter train, I left the extra pound of butter in the luggage rack.
Somebody was happy, weren't they? We bring you to 1953, and that's when you left Boston and went on to what?
I went on to New York as vice president of the Penrode Corporation, a former holding company of the Pennsylvania Railroad. Penrode had become a diversified investment company with still three or four sizable investments in railroads. They came after me because following the war, I was put in charge of the railroad portfolio at Keystone, which had a cost of about $120 million and a market value of less than $90. And it was considered to be a major problem, and I was given the job of dealing with it. And in the process, I became known as the outstanding railroad analyst and investment guy in Wall Street. And that's why Penrode came for me.
You had those challenges, some of the problems there with those railroad holdings. That led them to actually making a railroad purchase, right?
When a banker in Florida died in 1955, it was discovered by his lawyers that he owned 75% of the common stock of the Missouri-Kansas-Texas Railroad. And it was in hock in over 100 brokerage accounts across the country. He had never reported it to the SEC. He didn't believe in that. Anyway, Cy Lewis, a senior partner of Bear Stearns, was given the job of finding a buyer. The first buyer he came to was me, along with State Street Investment Corp in Boston. Penrode and State Street together bought the block of stock and therefore control of the Katy Railroad. One of the conditions of State Street's participation was that Penrode free up my time to run the show. So a few days later, Katy had a special board meeting, and I was elected chairman of the executive committee with full power to run the corporation and to dictate to all of the officers of the railroad, including the president, as to what we should do.
It was known famously in the country as the Katy Railroad.
That's right.
Represented the Missouri-Kansas-Texas Railroad. So obviously, then, Katy was in poor financial condition when you became
chairman. They were. They had a 7% preferred stock with dividend arrearages of $110 million. My first task, really, was to solve the problem of what to do with these preferred stockholders. We had two preferred stockholders that were on the board. One was a member of the New York Stock Exchange. The other was a young Jewish lawyer from New York. I had some problems dealing with him in board meetings. He would begin to raise his voice and shout and so forth. I didn't know exactly how to handle him until one day I was having a meeting of the board in Chicago at the Chicago Club. He began to raise his voice and rave and holler and so forth, and I said, "Now, I think you'd better lower your voice and talk respectably, because otherwise I have a policeman outside the door who will remove you from the meeting." Now, I had no policeman, but it worked. From that point on, whenever Abe started to raise his voice, all I had to say was, "Abe."
To correct this financial condition, what did you begin to do?
Well, we began to recapitalize and get rid of the dividend arrearages and generally overhaul the capital structure. That we succeeded in doing in a rather complicated transaction. Along the way, the president died, and I hired a young railroader who was president of the Chicago Great Western